by the dawn's early light. What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. Oh, the ramparts we walked were so gallantly streaming. The rocket's red glare, the flowers singing air.
Through the night,
that the flag
still there.
Okay, what you just heard was a full complement of Talk to Contactors on episode 118, the Twins National Anthem tryout episode. You got E. Rolf Pleiss, the Nodak Twins fan singing bass, Jay Korn doing some kind of talking, singing thing, and Paul doing his best E. Rolf imitation. Gentlemen, welcome aboard once again.
Hola.
Good evening, everybody. Glad to be with you again.
Paul, I understand you're just here to answer questions.
I'm just here so I won't get fined.
That's great. You're going to just be a real good contributor this week in Seattle. Last week we went to Twins Fest. So what did you guys think? Paul, weren't there. So
three-fourths of us went.
Paul, what did you think of Twins Fest?
I'm just here, so I won't get fined.
Good, 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 good. And the other two of you.
Go ahead, Cody.
Yeah, I went for all day Saturday, and kind of just made my way around. I hadn't been to it yet at Target Field, so I was doing a little bit of exploring some of the areas that I hadn't, been in for an extensive amount of time previously. So I did that for a while and checked out the yard sale thing and picked up a couple of grab bags for Eric and myself. And then bumped into Seth one time, talked to him for a while before he got back in the press-only area. Got in the line for a Dozier autograph, which was, they cut off the line right behind me, so that was pretty sweet to be able to get through that line and get his autograph. And then I hopped right back in the line because it was right after Dozier, Berrios was signing, so I wanted to get his as well. So did that. So that was kind of my rundown at the Twins Fest.
And Jay, you're the biggest autograph hunter of our group. So Twins Fest is a thing that you really enjoy and look forward to.
Yeah, it was a good year for autographs, I think. My prize was a Byron Buxton Sweet Spot autographed ball inscribed with first round pick, which is kind of rare. I haven't seen very many anywhere, really. So got a nice Buxton ball. I got a seat, a Metrodome seat, the bottom of a Metrodome seat I bought at Fan HQ. Both our friend of the podcast, Mark Smith, and I bought one. And so on Saturday, on Friday I was there early. I waited in line outside the gate. I was there, maybe a half hour, 45 minutes early. So on Friday, highlight of Friday was I was at the selfie station. And I took a photo with Tim Laudner, Dan Gladden, and the 1991 World Series trophy. For those who maybe don't remember, Tim Laudner drove in Dan Gladden to win Game 7 of that World Series. That was the Jack Morris. Yep. So that was kind of cool to take a picture. And you know what? They brought up the wrong World Series trophy at first. So they brought up the 87, and we were everybody in. I was number two in line, actually, Mark and I. So we were like, it's a 50-50 chance here, people. I can't believe you guys picked the wrong World Series trophy to bring up, you know.
Like, they don't have them clearly labeled in the display cases.
So as we were waiting for the proper trophy to arrive, kind of got to shoot the shit with Dan Gladden for a while, and he's a hoot. He kept hollering for a scotch. So finally, somebody brought him a scotch. Thank God. But we talked about his, he chopped his mullet off. So Dan Gladden is looking much more groomed than we have seen him in years past.
That's
so
terrible.
It was kind of interesting to see and talk about that quick. And we talked about his base. He's a collector also. Gladden collects memorabilia and autos and baseball cards and all that stuff. So we talked about his collection for a while. He's actually got it all boxed up. He's moving. I didn't really ask too many details about that.
Did he tell you what his prized possession is?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned it, because that led into a whole other kind of offshoot convo. His favorite card, it's an autographed Billy Ripken. I think it's like a 1986 Donruss card. But the thing about it is, on the bottom, you know, Ripken's standing there. He's got the bat, you know, holding the bat, two hands. It's a barrel on his shoulder. And on the bottom of the knob, it says "fuckface."
Oh, I've got that card.
So it's known as the Billy Ripken fuckface card. And Dan Gladden, just even though it's probably only worth, you know, $10 or $15, even if it is autographed. But that's his favorite. That's his favorite piece. So it just goes to show you that value means different things to different people.
Yeah, I think I picked up my Bill Ripken fuckface for about $9. So $15 is probably about right with an autograph on it.
Yep. Yeah, so that was cool. And then I got the Buxton ball later that night. I also got a Burt Blyleven ball. Interesting thing about Burt Blyleven, it's probably the second or third time I've got a ball autographed by Burt Blyleven, and he never signs it in the sweet spot. And he has now declined twice my request to put his Hall of Fame inscription on the ball. So I called him out on it. You know, I said, Burt, do you not ever sign on the sweet spot? You know, and he said, I only sign on the sweet spot when I sign balls for Parkinson's. So only his charity involved baseball autographs have the Hoff inscription and Sweet Spot SIGs.
That must be a newer thing, because I have a ball from Twins Fest back in the Metrodome days that he signed on the Sweet Spot, but it was pre Hall of Fame and stuff like that. So maybe, yeah, I mean, he's done it previously. It just must be a new thing for him.
The other thing about Burt that I found interesting, and I'd never seen this before, was that there was an authenticator from the Hall of Fame sitting next to him. So for 10 extra bucks, you could get a little Hall of Fame sticker authentication, you know, certificate of authenticity thing, which was kind of interesting. So I spent the 10 bucks and got the sticker on the ball for that. And then on Saturday, I bought a Metrodome seat bottom from our friends over at FanHQ. They were on sale Saturday morning. So it's like it's got gum underneath it. I mean, I'm serious. The thing is just so cool. So I got a gold, kind of gold Sharpie paint pen thing, and I kind of ran around Target Field on Saturday and got as many guys as I could to sign that. Probably got about 13 or 14 when all was said and done. Terry Ryan, Irvin Santana, Logan Darnell literally bumped into me, so I made him sign my seat. a couple other guys, Dick Bremer, I had a nice little talk with. You know, Dick's got some heart. He's got a weak ticker. He's got some stints in there and stuff, so he's been he's been taking the offseason to kind of get healthy and get right. I don't know, maybe he's a little worn down after the end of last year. God knows I'd be after three, four, 90 loss seasons in a row. So Dick looks good, though. You know, I always forget how tall Dick Bremer is. I mean, the guy's like 6'7", you know, good solid 220, 230. He's a big guy. So, but yeah, and you know, I know we'll probably talk a little bit more about this, but the thing that I'm probably going to take away most from Twins Fest 2015 was Miguel Sano's English is fantastic. It was so good to see. He has come so far as far as his English and his communication skills. He was cracking jokes. Miguel Sano has, and he's, you know, he's bulked up a little bit, looks to add about 10 or 15 pounds. Sano looked really good. What'd you think, Eric?
Well, say what you will, but the biggest takeaway from Twins Fest for me was a game-used spring training Brian Dinkelman jersey.
Ah, yes.
And, I mean, I like to think of myself as one of the two biggest Brian Dinkelman fans ever. The other one being Maya, and maybe the third one being his mom. So, I'm pretty excited about that spring training jersey. It's not a major league jersey, because when he played with the Twins that one September, he was number 26. This jersey is number 30. I'm trying to track down, I'm trying to get a hold of Dinkelman to find out when he wore 30, but I'm guessing it was like a spring training game or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. So we'll figure that out. He's coaching in the GCL this year, so maybe we can try and get him on the podcast sometime this year and talk baseball with the finest baseball player ever to come out of McKendree College in Southern Illinois. So, yeah, I don't know. Twins Fest, for me, you know, you stand in line, you drink a beer here or there. Mostly it's just about bumping into people that you haven't seen for a while. And, you know, we'll get into this next, but it's kind of like, you know, you see everyone from the internet that you normally just talk to on Twitter. You see them all in one place, so it's nice to do that. And then after Twins Fest, moseyed over to the Twins Daily Winter Meltdown. Cody was with me. Chuck Ruther came along as well. So the three of us kind of walked over to Mason's and did the meltdown thing. So that was even more of all your favorite Twitter people and Twins bloggers all in a room together. They did the interview with Dave St. Peter and Jock Jones. It was interesting to hear those guys talk, but neither one of them said too much of substance. You know, Dave St. Peter is... he's the president of baseball or of the Twins, and he talks like he's the president or some other type of politician. You know, he says a lot but doesn't actually say anything. And Jock Jones was funny. He was humorous. You know, he's a likable guy, laughs a lot, but kind of like, you know, a typical athlete. He talks a lot about, you know, that guy is a great guy. He's one of the best ever. You know, we had a lot of fun. We did a lot of cool things, but... I don't know that it was the fault of, you know, the Twins Daily guys, but we just didn't get a ton of super insightful answers from either of the guys.
Yeah, and I don't think the one guy that wasn't there, Tim Laudner, I think he would have been in the same boat, especially with his affiliation with broadcasting and stuff now. I think just overall that's kind of what you're going to get in one of those situations. I don't think it's meant to be a hard-nosed interview type thing. So I don't know. It's still entertaining. It's nice that they can get some of those guys out there for an event like that, so that we can, you know, we were able to fill Mason's even more than last year. I don't think they ever sold out of tickets, which probably made it a little bit more comfortable in there. But I think just by the eye test, I felt like there were more people there than last year. Overall, it was a nice little event and a fun way to wrap up the Twins Fest weekend.
Yeah, then you get to hang around and talk with, you know, everybody who loves talking baseball and have a couple beers. And
yeah, it was cool to talk to later in the night, Eric and I went over and talked to former Twins minor leaguer AJ Pettersson, so that was kind of cool to be able to talk to him. My wife was surprised at how small he was for being a former minor league player, and I was like, well, he was a middle infielder, so it's not like he was out there, you know, mashing home runs or anything.
Yeah, but he maybe has lost some muscle mass since he,
yeah,
because he's got to be about 5'8 and a buck 60 soaking wet.
Yeah.
You know, quickness to the ball was kind of his game. So, you know, not what you think of when you think professional athlete, but still a pretty interesting guy. And, you know, just talking baseball. Bill TPA was there. The Mike Bates, the common man. You know, TCNL, all your Twitter favorites were all over the place. So everywhere you turned, it was someone who loved baseball and would talk to you about baseball for half of an hour. So pretty fun event altogether.
What was the consensus there at the meltdown? I'm sorry, I missed it this year. What was the consensus at the meltdown? Just about, I don't know, just kind of the organization as a whole. I mean, what is everybody kind of, what's the general temperature of the fan, the hardcore fan base?
I would say there, it's as far as what the Twins did this winter, the feeling was they had a good winter, but most people are still lukewarm on the Twins going into 2015. I mean, this is a team that could struggle to be fourth place in the American League Central. You know, I mean, the White Sox got better. The Indians didn't get worse. The Royals didn't get worse. The Tigers maybe got a little bit worse, but we're so far ahead of the Twins. You know, there's not a lot of hope and excitement about 2015, but there's hope and excitement beyond that. The Twins are putting the right pieces together, and once they have a couple guys come up from the minors, and if they stick, then all of a sudden you have an exciting team after that. So lukewarm on 2015, but excited what the team has done. They're certainly spending a lot of money right now, and so you're going to see a better product in 2015 than you did last year. The pitching will be markedly improved. And as we talked last year, though, that offense could take a step back, and they could be kind of a similar team by the end of the year in terms of record-wise if some of those guys from the minor leagues don't come up. So I think,
I'll tell you one thing that I kind of skipped over a little bit, and I kind of maybe because I wanted to talk a little bit at length about it, but I don't think any of you guys got to hear Molitor talk with Pat Royce at 1500, and they had the live broadcast going there, and they probably talked for a good 40 minutes. It was an extended interview with Molitor. And I'm sold on him more than ever. This guy really seems to have a handle on what's going on. He's been working, you know, full time, full days a week, 5 days a week. He did catch some shit about hiring a pitching coach without ever having actually met him, which I thought was interesting, and that turned into a little bit of a back and forth. But it's something maybe we could talk about one down day. But not hiring a pitching coach without even ever meeting the guy. He's had dinner with Mauer. He's sat down and had lengthy talks with all the players. And another interesting Stauffer, came right out and said Stauffer is going to get a shot at the rotation in spring training. What do you guys think about that?
I think we heard that when they signed him, and the Twins probably are comfortable saying that and not actually believing that the shot that he's getting is actually a real shot.
Anthony Swarzak got told the last 2 years that he would be trying out for the rotation as well, and that was never really a real thing.
Yeah, well, and how many times did we hear that, Brian Dunsing was getting a shot in the rotation after he'd been cemented into the bullpen? So
it is what it is.
Yeah, it's just a name that I guess we haven't heard. I haven't heard anyway. Nobody's really talked about. And to have Molitor come out and really, you know, make a public invite for this dude to maybe get that number five. But he seemed real confident about the rotation. He said he's going to be a hands-off pitching guy. I mean, this new pitching coach, along with Gene Glenn to a lesser extent, are really going to handle a majority of the pitching. Day in, day out pitching staff decisions and stuff. Also, Paul, you'll be happy to know that somebody asked him if Eddie Guardado is the assistant pitching coach. You know, we have assistant hitting coaches and assistant bench coaches, assistant equipment managers, and all this stuff. So is your bullpen coach an assistant pitching coach? He comes right out and he says no. No, he is not. Eddie's a great guy to have on the team, blah, 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 but he is not. He is not an assistant pitching coach.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Guardado in the bullpen. I mean, the bullpen coach does more than pick up the phone and tell which guys to warm up. You know, a lot of the things that bullpen coach is doing happen between games or off the field, and you know, maybe it's seeing something in the bullpen or making an adjustment or something like that. But certainly, I think the pitching coach comes in, sets the philosophy, does the heavy lifting. And the bullpen coach is more of just a guy that follows the orders there.
Another little tidbit, a guy I work with was out Friday night, must have been well after Twins Fest was over, and he was at that new restaurant downtown. It's, what is it, like the Stalk and the Spoon and the Stalk, or something, some trendy name like that with a spoon or something in it. You have to make reservations like 3 weeks to get in. You can't even like go and sit at the bar. The place is like super, super exclusive and hot right now. Anyway, he's about 6'7". He was like, I could go sit down at the bar if I want. He goes in there, he sits down at the bar. Joe Mauer's sitting there. Joe Mauer was the only one he recognized, but clearly at a table full of teammates, with a table full of teammates there, you know, at 8 o'clock, 8:30. On Friday after Twins Fest, sitting down to a nice dinner with a bunch of the guys, my buddy wound up getting asked to leave after he finished his drink. But I thought that it was a good little omen that Maurer was taking the boys out to dinner on Friday night, huh?
Heck yeah! Anytime the highest paid guy on your team can pick up the tab, that's good for morale, I'm sure.
Yeah, no word on who picked up that bill, but I hope Joe did.
It looked like Mr. Arcia had been out for a while the night before, from his demeanor at when I was going through the line to get Berrios's autograph. Arcia was in the line too, and he was asking one of the Twins Fest volunteers if they could go get him a beverage with some caffeine because he needed some sleep. He said.
Well, Cody, if you wrecked, did you see that was Arcia's wife was accompanying him, and their little son was also there. I exchanged. What's that?
Wasn't that Berrios's?
No, I that's what Mark thought too, but I'm pretty sure that was Arcia's wife. And because remember last year when he had to leave the team, his son had to be taken to the hospital. Oh. And
but the baby was wearing a shirt that said "Daddy's little girl." So
are you
I think
sure?
It, yeah.
Well, I guess it was Berrios' wife. Either way, she was hot.
Well, there might have been two wives and babies floating around. But I know Berrios threw up a shot on Twitter or Facebook or somewhere of him and his baby Valentina, I believe is the name. So they were around. Either way, there's a lot of Twins players with babies. There's Byron Buxton, Jose Berrios, Maurer and his twins. I believe
yep.
Plouffe and his wife are now expecting their first child sometime coming up here. And
whether it was Berrios or Arcia, they weren't the only ones to bring their family. I saw Joe's wife and the twins were both at Target Field on Saturday. Trevor Plouffe was there with his nephew. A lot of the players had some family members with them. Trevor Plouffe was wearing, like, you know, the players walk around with their jerseys on. When I saw Plouffe, he had just a flannel shirt on walking around the vending area with his family. So I think a lot of a bunch of the players had family and kids and stuff at Twins Fest this year. Certainly more so than I ever remember, so that was good to see.
Yeah, the Twins do a good job of, you know, making it feel like a family fun place and for fans and players alike. So, you know, I think it was a fun weekend overall, a really fun Saturday that I had with Twins Fest and the Meltdown together. So it kind of puts me into that baseball mode. We now have less than a month until spring training begins. I think it's today, Thursday. It's, what, 25 more days until pitchers and catchers report. So it's just right around the corner. It'll be here before we know it. So it's that time of year where we're starting to get excited about that. Last week we talked about arbitration. The Twins had avoided arbitration with most of their guys. Brian Dunsing and Jordan Schaefer were still hanging out there. Brian Dunsing ends up getting a modest raise and avoids arbitration. He's going to be making $2.7 million next year to pitch out of the bullpen for the Twins. We've said this a few times before. We were confused when the Twins kept him on the 40-man roster. And now, I mean, the nature of arbitration is that you're going to get a raise, so that's not necessarily surprising there. But what his role is in a very crowded bullpen will be interesting to see once they get out of spring training.
It's to me, it's got to be because of some of his clubhouse stuff and working with maybe some of the younger guys they're going to have out there in that bullpen. And he was just given over the weekend at the Diamond Awards, like their community service or community involvement type thing for what he and his wife have done as far as in the Twin Cities area community. So to me, it's got to be there. I mean, they're keeping him around for some of his performance, but also just what he means as a veteran guy and one of the longest tenured guys on this roster.
Yeah, and then we've got Jordan Schaefer also avoids arbitration. He's now going to make about $1.5 million next year. The Twins just need center field depth right now, so
yeah.
No surprise there. $1.5 million, you know, it is what it is. He's not going to hit like he did last year, but as long as he can play defense and maybe steal a base or two off the bench, that'll be fine.
Yeah, and maybe it's a situation where if if we find out, you know, if the Twins start using Santana more in center field, or if Aaron Hicks emerges from his funk at the major league level, maybe it's a situation where they can deal Schaefer later in the year, a la Sam Fold this past season, you know, and get a little bit of something back, a usable piece for Schaefer. And for $1.5 million, that's not too bad.
Yeah, seems like a deal to me. I mean, well, you know, it's not like you could take that money and, like, go get something a whole heck of a lot different or better, so.
Yeah, it's just a piece on the roster. And with Schaefer, then, the Twins essentially have rounded out their offseason spending unless something really bizarre here happens in the next month or so. The Twins
something
now,
bizarre has already happened, gentlemen. The Twins tendered a contract to Eduardo Nunez, failed to go to arbitration with him, and then gave him over $1 million on purpose.
That's interesting.
That's bizarre. If the Twins don't trade Trevor Plouffe or he doesn't break his leg, I don't understand how this deal makes sense. I know we talked about this before. He's probably just an insurance guy, a AAA guy, will accept an assignment to AAA, but I don't understand. He has no offensive upside. He has no defensive upside. He's below average at the bat. And, I mean, if you need a middle infielder, go to AAA. Go to AA. Pull up a Polanco again. I mean, I don't understand. Someone make it make sense to me.
I cannot do that, buddy. I wish I could. I guess I'm not as worked up about it as you seem to be, but it's $1 million. I mean, in the world of Major League Baseball, you know, that's like minimum wage.
Right, and I don't care. You spend $1 million, and I can, if it makes sense, if there's a vision, if there's some kind of upside. But it's Eduardo Nunez. The only thing he does of any value is run around the bases without a helmet on, and it gets the fans excited.
Yeah,
that is pretty cool.
The Twins must think that he's good enough at shortstop that if Danny Santana can't stick, that they would be comfortable with Eduardo Escobar starting at shortstop and having Nunez be the primary backup. That's the only thought, right? Because he's a disaster scenario guy. He makes a team, he plays in a disaster scenario.
Yeah, I guess. But you could just bring up Doug Bernier.
You could, but Bernier hits even worse than Nunez. And we already know the Twins don't care that much about defense. Look in the corners of the outfield.
Well, then they should care about offense, and Eduardo Nunez doesn't fit the bill there either.
Well, if your alternative is Doug Bernier, he does.
I give up.
The Twins haven't been able to do middle infield, especially shortstop, well for the last decade. And so when they acquired Nunez, he instantly became one of the three best shortstops the Twins had readily available. And that hasn't changed. So, I mean, I don't like him being there. If the Twins had any other option, I'm sure they would have went there. But he just serves as that disaster option, I think, is what he hangs around for. Yeah, and they're comfortable with him. They know him. He's a known face.
It would be interesting to see if Levi Michael, their former first-round pick, had moved through the system like I believe they thought Levi Michael was going to move through the system. I think this is a situation where Levi Michael would be on the roster and not Mr. Nunez. But that draft from a few years ago for the Twins is turning out not very well, the 2011 draft with Levi Michael moving slowly through the minor leagues, and then who was it that just got suspended?
Hudson Boyd.
Hudson Boyd, yeah, getting suspended. So their first two picks in that draft have not lived up to expectations thus far. But
yeah, you know, it seemed like he finally had put it together in 2014. Then he fouled that ball off his foot and pretty much missed the second last two-thirds of the season, you know, but he's still a guy that's just had, 10 or 15 games above A-ball so far.
Yeah.
So for a guy that was taken in the first round, was the Twins' first draft pick in 2011. He hasn't done anything in three minor league seasons.
Out of college as well is the important thing to know. He was considered one of the best college available players in that draft, and that's why the Twins picked him, because of their lack of infield depth and how they hadn't been really able to develop these infield talents. Danny Santana got to the big leagues before him, obviously. Jorge Polanco did. You know, some of these guys that were even lower than Michael as he was coming into the organization have surpassed him. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he's probably at the point now where he's going to be, you know, if or when he does make the major league squad, it's probably as more of a utility type player. Unless he can put together a full season of what we saw for part of last year.
And he's not a guy that the Twins see playing shortstop either.
No.
He has to hit his way onto the ball club, and right now he's got a couple guys to jump over, and then he's got to deal with Brian Dozier.
But as a utility guy, they could plug him in at, you know, he could play some third, he could, if they really had to, he could be thrown in at short, or he could be, you know, backing up second base as well. So, but he's not going to be a starter.
The rest of the Twins system, their minor league system, though, is doing pretty well. So if you would just ignore the shortstop position altogether, the Twins are great. I mean, even including the shortstop position, right now Keith Law came out with his prospect rankings or prospect system rankings earlier this week, and Keith Law had the Twins ranked second behind the Chicago Cubs, who have seven shortstops, it seems like, in their organization. But the Twins are rated number two in baseball right now, which I think is pretty fair. They've hung around that top. They haven't really graduated any of their big, high upside talent yet. And the Cubs, you know, were the benefit of that Samardzija trade last year, added Addison Russell to kind of put them over the top.
Yeah, I mean, it also helps to have Chris Bryant, who Keith Law came out today with his top 100 prospects. And Chris Bryant was his number one overall after the monster season that he had last year. Buxton ranked two. Sano was in the top 12 or so, or 12 or 15. Other guys like Meyer, and he's still pretty high on Meyer. He wasn't as high on Berrios, who came in near the back end of his top 100. He's seen Berrios a lot, he said, and he isn't impressed he feels like Berrios gives up too many fly balls, which as he's getting through some of the higher levels of the minor leagues, those balls might start leaving the park with more experienced hitters. And he doesn't like the plane on his fastball because, it comes back a lot to just his
stature.
His lack of height. Not as high on him, but likes Meyer, was in his top 50, and then Cole Stewart was in his top 100 as well. So I think all in all Nick Gordon was in his top 50 as well. So I think Nick Gordon was in his top 45 even. So likes a lot of the higher prospects within the Twins system. The one takeaway I took from it, though, was just that he's not very high on Berrios, even after the season that Berrios just had.
Well, and I think Berrios fights that, right? Because he's a kind of a guy that more or less wasn't expected to be huge because of his size. And, you know, he has done it on the field, which has moved him up. And as long as he continues to do that, you know, but, you know, when you think about guys like Keith Law or Kylie McDaniels at Fangraphs or Jason Parks, who, you know, now is working for the Cubs, those type of guys, their job is, what is this player type? What is their stuff? is this something that should succeed long term? You know, and they're more often than not, if they see something about, you know, a particular pitch or movement, you know, and then they can, and that isn't as great, and then they can add in, well, there's this body type issue and all of this, then, you know, they just play those percentages. And when you start adding things together, it becomes less and less likely that they can continue to produce. But every once in a while, that happens.
Yeah, and one thing you did note about Berrios was he thinks that Berrios throws with his arm too much and not enough with using his legs. So I don't know what the remedy is for that, but maybe with all this off-season workout stuff we've been saying, maybe he's built up his legs more and he can start utilizing them a little bit more through his motion.
Well, and we got a new pitching coach too, right? So maybe Neil Allen comes in and he says, hey, you're doing this little thing wrong. Or maybe he finds a way to get through. You know, or maybe it's, you know, Eddie Gordano, you know, is a guy that, you know, they got, the Twins are doing a lot better now, I think, this year with, you know, Spanish speakers on that staff. And so maybe there's some more comfortable conversations that are happening. There's not always an interpreter between a guy and a coach. And so maybe, you know, it's those little tiny things that can make that difference. Maybe that helps.
Well, if nothing else, Berrios certainly seems ready to go. I mean, I had a chance
he's
to
got
watch.
Braces.
Yeah. And a baby.
He's a baby faced himself. I mean, the kid, you could, he's so, you know, he looks young. He looks new. He looks, you know, but he's got that vibe, that energy, you know, that bounce in
charisma.
He's got that charisma, man. He really does.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's a guy that you just want to keep on hoping on, right? You just hope that he can continue doing what he's doing. And, you know, if he comes up and he's, you know, a number three starter, heck yes. Love it. Awesome. Great. Fantastic. So we'll just wait and see. Keep following him as he goes along. Since we're talking about pitching prospects, I don't know who saw this, but Alex Meyer compared himself to Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson is a guy that at age 27, I was listening to the Baseball Prospectus podcast this morning. I think they said at age 30 or age 27 or something, Randy Johnson was like the 800th best pitcher in baseball in terms of career WAR. And by the time he retired, he was, you know, in the top five for pitchers. So you could debut late and still be Randy Johnson, but it doesn't usually happen that way.
Yeah, I think some of it came out of Meyer has decided that he is going to wear number 51, which is was Randy Johnson's number. And he just turned 25 3 weeks ago. He was asked about, you know, what's taken him so long to reach the majors and why and stuff like that. And he said, you know, it's fine. Randy Johnson came up when he was 25, because he happened to be too tall, or quote unquote too tall. He says, you know, even if I can have half of that career, you know, that's going to be a good thing. So, you know, the comparison is, I mean, in their size and stature is good, but, you know, Meyer's got, you know, hasn't shown the devastating stuff that Randy Johnson had or was able to develop throughout his career. So,
yeah, and Johnson didn't show that stuff either, right?
No,
I mean, when
no.
he first came up. So, but that's certainly a lofty goal to have for anybody.
And he needs a mullet.
Everybody needs a mullet.
Yeah.
Everybody needs a mullet, and everybody needs a bosom for a pillow. Those are my two things in life, my guiding principles.
Okay.
Down on the farm system, Byron Buxton recalling his outfield collision last summer, said that he thought he was paralyzed. And if you remember, he had that hard collision. He was unconscious on the field for a period of time, and went straight over to the hospital on a stretcher and an ambulance, and it was definitely a scary, scary thing. And he came out with, you know, as we said at the time, only a concussion, as bad as concussions can be. But he seemed like he was happy. He was bouncing around at Twins Fest. We haven't heard that there's ill effects or lingering effects related to that that he's dealing with. So hopefully all systems are go here in a month when spring training gets rolling.
I predict a big year from Byron Buxton. I think this year will be everything we were hoping for last year, plus a little sprinkle on top. I think he's going to end the season. I mean, people were talking at Twins Fest that he'd be a September call-up, but I think he'll end the season at AAA after a strong campaign all the way through, injury-free. It's my gut feeling on Bucks.
Last year, I had a gut feeling on Bucks, and remember going out of spring training, he hurt his wrist, and I said, oh, this won't be a big deal. He'll be playing again in 2 weeks. And then it was about 3 months before he was back.
Yeah, well, I think he's got to be healthy now. Same thing for Sano. I'm really excited to see both of them from, you know, the first days of spring training all the way through. Maybe we'll see one or both, but I think both are poised and primed for big years. I'm really excited.
Paul, yeah. What do you think about Byron Buxton?
I'm reserving judgment. He's got to play before you can say anything. I think it's cool that I think it came out with an interview with either Jake Mauer or with Minkiewicz, I think, that the team was calling him like Brandon Baxter or something during the season. Anyone remember that story to try and kind of keep him humble? So they just started mispronouncing his name. By the end of the season, they were calling him Brandon Baxter or something.
That's pretty good.
So that's what I'm excited for. I'm excited to see old Brandon Baxter on the field.
Hey, related to that, how bad is the world of baseball nicknames right now?
Pretty bad.
I mean, who has the best nickname in baseball right now? I mean, Panda?
Yeah, probably.
And that's not even good, right? I mean...
Yeah, I don't know.
The last good nickname was the Rocket, maybe.
That's you got.
What about Willie Mays Hayes?
Scooter Jeanette. That's a pretty good name. Scooter. That's something.
Scooter. Scooter.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's not the golden age of baseball anymore, that's for sure, for nicknames. I mean, you got Urban Santana. Urban is kind of a nickname. His name is Johan.
All these guys do is put an I or a ski on the end of everybody's last name, and that's what they all call him.
Yeah, and the Twins just put, like, an S halfway through a guy's name, and they'll call him Buxes or Buxy or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. Paul, I was hoping you'd go back to your old friend, Chicken Parmalee, Chris Parmalee, former Twins failure. Can we put the failure tag on Chris Parmalee, former first round draft pick, ended up not making the 40-man roster this year, was claimed or elected free agency rather than accepting a minor league assignment, and he signed a deal with the Baltimore Orioles, a minor league deal, I should point out, but he does have an invite to spring training. And the Orioles have had a little bit of good luck with getting a first baseman who all of a sudden can hit. They've also had pretty good luck with reclaiming guys the Twins wanted nothing to do with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we've said it on previous shows that I think it was probably a time and situation for Parmalee to get in a new organization, hear some new voices, and show that he can stick at the major league level, because he's had multiple opportunities in Minnesota and it just wasn't going to work out and there wasn't space on the roster anymore.
All right.
So long, Chris Parmalee.
Chris Parmalee, we hardly
chicken
knew
Parmesan jokes gone forever.
Well, until he makes the All-Star team this year.
Yeah. So that's pretty much going to do it for Twins news. Why don't we jump over and quickly we'll go through reviewing the roster, just because I think we've talked about most of these guys plenty over the winter, so there's not a lot of new things to say. This week we're talking about Tommy Malone, Max Kepler, and Trevor Plouffe. Why don't we start with Tommy Malone? Left-handed pitcher. The Twins offered him arbitration. He had about a 5.5 ERA with the Twins last year after coming over from Oakland.
7.06 ERA.
Okay. Yeah, it was bad. but he is left-handed, and the Twins think that he has a chance to be their fifth starter this year.
Let me start this off here. You know, that conversation with Pat Royce from 1500 ESPN that I referenced earlier with Molitor at Twins Fest, this was the very first question that Royce asked him is, you know, if Tommy Malone doesn't make the rotation and you have, you know, probably five right-handed starters, does that bother you? And what's your thoughts on Malone? Something to that effect. And the first thing Molitor said was vote of confidence for Malone. Whether he even said, you know, the fourth and fifth spot were sort of kind of shuffled and undecided. He seemed to point to Malone's past history in Oakland. He's talked to a lot of people within baseball that have a high that swear by this guy, that have seen him. He has a good enough track record for Molitor to express that Malone is going to have a shot at the rotation the same way May and Stauffer and Gibson and Meyer, all of them will all be will all get a good look this spring. So that's the recap, you know, as best I can remember from what Molitor had to say to him. I had a chance to size Tommy Malone up. He's nothing impressive. I mean, you know, I'm probably like 5 inches, 3, 4, 5 inches taller than him. You know, he's kind of, you know, on the lean side. He doesn't pop out at you as being, you know, an overpowering, big, strong guy or anything like that. You know, if you passed him on the street, you'd never even know he was a major league pitcher. So I guess time will tell, but Malone seems to at least heading into spring training, he's going to get a shot.
I think my biggest concern about Malone is last year that he walked almost three guys per nine. And if you look at his numbers every year, that number is creeping up. And while it jumped quite a bit from 2013 and 2014. And I'm concerned that as a starting pitcher, if he's going to be walking three guys per nine and he's only striking out 5.5 per nine, I guess, again, I don't see the upside. And I understand he was hurt once he got to Minnesota. But, I mean, I talked about this before. You look at his home road splits away from O.co Coliseum, and I'm not impressed with him. And while I would rather have Tommy Malone than Eduardo Nunez, you could probably pretty easily change my mind on that one.
Yeah, I mean, in Oakland, we saw from Malone, he was able to make 73 starts. His ERA was, you know, just a tick over 3.8. He pitched over 440 innings, but a lot of the stuff Paul was just talking about, you know, he's not going to strike out a ton of guys. His whip was 1.26 with them. So nothing fantastic. So, I mean, at best, he's going to fit into the back end of this rotation. And maybe, you know, be between the rotation up and down. We'll see if he ends up, you know, sticking for all of this year or if it's probably a situation where, you know, some of these younger, more talented guys are going to pass him by unless he gets off to a hot start.
All right. So let me say this. Does anyone think he's on the opening day roster?
No.
Oh, I think he will be, I guess.
Yep, I think he will be.
Does anyone think he'll be in the starting rotation?
I think he has a chance. A
yes from both of you guys? That were yes before?
I think that Mike Pelfrey is now in line for the number five starter job.
Yes!
I cannot believe I just said.
Oh, my gosh. I just threw up in my mouth.
I cannot believe it.
Mike Pelfrey will lick that up for you. Okay. So Tommy Malone, maybe on the roster, but definitely left-handed.
Truth.
All right. So let's go to Trevor Plouffe, also a known quantity. Last year we saw Trevor Plouffe take some positive steps forward, especially defensively. No longer seen as a liability at the hot corner. If you just look at last year's stats alone, maybe one of the better third basemen in the American League or all of baseball, perhaps. So,
what is Plouffe's contract status?
Free.
He's in arbitration.
Yep, he signed for this year for just under $5 million. He will. Won't be a free agent till 2018, so a year before Brian Dozier. So
yeah, he's a Super 2 guy.
Yep.
And he needs to, as good as his defense, as good as his defense has been at third base, Miguel Sano is going to be knocking on the door by the end of this year, and so he really needs to make, you know, maybe a show some more of that power that he has, maybe make contact on a more regular basis. Because this could be a guy that's destined to be a corner outfielder if Miguel Sano is Miguel Sano.
Here's my thinking. And it's probably flawed. But it seems to me like Trevor Plouffe's stock is pretty high right now. And given the fact that he's going to be getting pay raises over the next few years, he's already making $6 million. I think now might be the time to start shopping them. See what you could get. I mean, buy high or buy low, sell high. We've got even if Sano's not ready, we got Nunez. Nunez can play third.
Yeah, I think there were some thoughts that after the Giants lost out on re-signing Sandoval that they were looking to deal for a third baseman. So at that time, I think I even threw something up on my blog about that, or on Twitter or somewhere, that the Giants had some pitching prospects or other prospects that the Twins could maybe get a couple guys for a known quantity like Plouffe, but nothing ever came to fruition, obviously, out of that because the Giants went in a different direction. But yeah, if Sano were to get off to a hot start, I think that would be great. But I don't see the Twins, I guess, right now. I think he's destined to take over the corner outfield spot that will be occupied by Torii Hunter this year, kind of a la like what Michael Kadire did for the Twins. You know, a guy that they'll just shift from infield out into the outfield and let him continue playing. But obviously it would be nice to see some for him to continue to make some of the positive offensive strides that we saw last year with his ability. You know, he showed a lot better ability to go the opposite way last year instead of just being super pull happy. And that allowed him to hit for, his OPS jumped like 50 points last year. Got a lot more doubles. That wasn't hitting the ball out of the park like we saw that one summer where he went on a tear, but that's fine. If we're getting, some better on base ability and more power out of him, we'll take it.
Eric, what do you think about Plouffe?
I think he'll end up in the corner outfield, and I think he is going to get expensive, but I think Jay, while he might be at an all-time high in terms of his value, every team in baseball knows that his value is sky high right now, and they know that if Miguel Sano plays well, the Twins will have to struggle to find a home for him.
I don't think that's true. I think there would be multiple offers for Trevor Plouffe, especially right. I was going to interrupt before, but I almost feel like if Sano did get off to a hot start and did display some power and the ability to handle a full-time major league job, I almost think that would lower Plouffe's stock more than anything. That's why now is the time. There's a lot of teams out there that would jump at the bit to make an offer on Trevor Plouffe, I think. And I'd like to keep the guy, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think you would have to show more another solid season of playing third base
defense.
Because
that's going to add
value to his stock. If he is, he was, according to, some of the metrics that they use, he was one of the top few guys at third base in the American League last year. So if that trend continues, there might be more teams willing to give up a prospect or two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and don't forget, 2 years ago, his defensive value was well below average. Last year, it was almost just barely above replacement level. So really 1 year of him being an asset defensively. So it's come a long way, but will it stay there? You know, we'll have to see. I don't think he'll get a lot worse, but needs to prove that, you know, last season wasn't just a fluke. And then last on reviewing the roster here, we've got Max Kepler. And if you remember, Max Kepler is a guy that's been in the organization since 2010. At the time, and maybe still, he was the highest paid European international free agent or international guy ever signed. He was signed out of Germany to... His parents are ballet dancers, so he's got some athleticism there. He keeps getting bigger. He's 6'4", 205, but I bet he's more like 6'4", 235 right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a big kid. For a long time, there was thoughts that Kepler could be a center fielder because he's so athletic that, you know, despite being that big, he could pull that off. But we saw, you know, last year or 2013, he was splitting time between the center field, corner, and first base. This past year in Fort Myers, while he was still used primarily as a center fielder, he spent significant time in the corners and again at first base. And so he needs to, you know, continue to be versatile defensively. But with Max Kepler, I think really the thing that you like about him, not so much about defense, is just he needs to hit. He needs to show some power. That big frame needs to pay off for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has been, you know, like last year at Fort Myers and at every stop along the way, he has been over a year younger than the other hitters in the league just because of how young he was when he did sign. But yeah, I think the Twins, a couple seasons ago, he had a repeat at Elizabethton, and he was able to hit close to 300 that season with a 925 OPS. So that, I mean, that was awesome. He hit double-digit home runs, was hitting doubles, running for triples, showing the speed-power combination that I think the Twins were envisioning when they signed him for that that significant amount of money. But his last couple years at he struggled a little with the transition into the Midwest League, only played 61 games that year. I think he had some injuries a couple seasons ago, but last year really then was his first full season of getting in, and he still only played, you know, 100 games. He made some small offensive strides. His batting average took a jump up last year over the previous season, was getting on base over 33% of the time. But again, as Eric talked about, it's going to come down to, I mean, as he's getting bigger, he's going to need to show that he has that power ability, especially because he likely will end up playing a corner outfield or first base once he gets to the major leagues. So he's going to need to be able to hit for power out of those positions.
I don't really know a whole lot about Max Kepler. You guys, sir, I certainly can't add anything to what you guys have said, but it seems like he's been around for a long time. We've talked about him for years now, and, you know, we keep waiting and waiting, and I just, you know, hope he doesn't turn out to be a Chris Parmalee.
Well, and he's 21 years old, and as Cody mentioned, I mean, he was almost 2 years younger than the average player in Fort Myers last year. So he's still young for where he's at. It just seems like we're waiting, 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 right? I mean, it seems like he should be farther ahead. And some of that is that we've seen guys that come up to the major leagues at 21 and 22 years old and all of a sudden are ready to go. I mean, but not everyone is Mike Trout. Not everyone's Jose Fernandez, right? I mean,
well,
the traditional path of if he makes, you know, 3 years from now, he's 24 years old. And he could, you know, be ready to rock and roll. So, I mean, a lot can happen between now and then, but certainly that power, that's the big thing. Last year he had 5 home runs in 407 plate appearances.
Mm-hmm.
That's not cutting it for a guy that's 6'4 and 230.
And some of it might be just, I mean, his development. Like we said, there haven't been talents that have come out of out of that European baseball funnel or whatever. You know, guys aren't it isn't as big over there as it is in the United States. So like the guys that you were mentioning are the guys that are, you know, the Mike Trouts and stuff like that were playing in showcases over here and are playing baseball constantly. So a guy like him, he probably had to hunt out, you know, more baseball over there in Europe. And I think that was, I mean, his mom even gave up some of her career so that they could move over here so he could finish high school in Fort Myers and be closer to the Twins complex and be able to help his professional career. So he is very raw, but he has a lot of skills and a lot of tools that are going to be fun to watch. And the reason really he's on the 40-man roster is because they had to add him because of when they signed him and how those rules work with that situation. Because he signed at 16, he had to get on now so that he wasn't susceptible to the Rule 5 draft.
And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Interesting to note, and I don't have my thing in front of me here. This is off the top of my head, so I probably am wrong. But I think Max Kepler was the only one not on the 40-man roster who did not attend Twins Fest.
Or the only one on the 40-man roster?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. That could be correct, I guess. But this was the first time Arcia has come, and he's been on the 40-man for a couple years. So some of these guys that play that are from overseas or that play in some winter leagues overseas, they choose to stay with their team or choose to stay overseas because they're going to have to be back here in a few weeks anyway for spring training.
Yeah, and I think maybe there are some other guys that maybe just that don't stick out. And I didn't look into who's there signing autographs, but I don't remember seeing like Lester Oliveros.
Yeah.
Steven Pryor. I mean, was he a guy? Jason yep. Wheeler.
Pryor was there. I don't know about Wheeler. Oliveros was definitely not.
Yeah.
Was Eduardo Escobar there even?
Yes, Escobar was there. I got his auto on my seat.
So.
What about Nunez?
Didn't see Nunez, no.
Oh my. Yeah,
so, I think there are some guys that weren't on the 40-man roster. Or that were on the 40-man roster, not there. There's also some guys not on the 40-man roster, like Max Murphy, you know, and some other of those prospect guys. Maybe, you know, Max Murphy's the kind of guy, he's a local kid. He's from, what, Eden Prairie? Is that right on the pedigree for Max Murphy? You know, but a local kid. So coming back and trying to draw some more fans in from the area and get them out to Twins Fest as well. So it's kind of a fan favorite 40-man roster for the most part. If we've heard of you before, you'll be around, but
yeah,
not everyone always comes. So that's, I don't know, we got about a good chunk of segment there. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back, we'll talk about beers, we'll do Down in the Pond, and go around the league and wrap this up.
Sounds good.
Next up on the Talk to Contact podcast, we're going to take a trip down into the minor league lake. This week, we're going down on the pond.
Down on the pond.
This week, we're going to take a look at Washington State native Cameron Boozer. The most interesting thing I can find out about Cameron Boozer is that he's from Fife, which is a town here out near Seattle. And the only cool thing about Fife is...
Oh, yeah, Bethana Fife had a wife.
Bethana Fife had a wife. That's
where is she now?
And that's really all there is to say about this guy, except that he's left-handed.
We never get any answer about the Bethana Fife's wife, do we?
Never.
Shakespeare doesn't ever give us that little tidbit of information.
But unlike Shakespeare, we're going to give you some information about people from Fife, namely about Cameron Boozer and his left-handed ability to throw baseballs.
Now, dude, when he comes up to the target field, you know, like in a year or 4, Are we going to go booze? No?
Okay. No, I don't think anyone will get excited about him because he's probably just going to be a reliever.
It could still be cool to chant booze.
You're right. That could be cool.
Depends on how good he is, if he's worthy of a chant or not. But
I'm calling him booze. I'm calling him booze from here on out.
He kind of had an interesting, background of getting into professional baseball because he actually had Tommy John surgery when he was a senior in high school. And then he went to Oregon State for his freshman year, didn't really play a whole lot. And then he tore his ACL and missed a whole season. So then he actually went to Central Arizona Community College, which to me sounds like a made-up place, like somewhere you would just get like an online degree. But apparently they have a baseball team. Apparently they have a baseball team, so that's cool. And the Twins.
Some people say, you know, we can't believe Central Arizona Community College. We got a baseball team.
The Twins, they signed him as an undrafted free agent in 2013. He was going to go to Texas Arlington after his community college stint, but the Twins signed him, got him in because his velocity had ticked up a lot after not really being in a lot of action. This year he made the jump from the rookie leagues to. Are from the GCL to the Appy League, so moved from one rookie league to the other. His ERA went down a tick, and he saw his strikeouts per nine jump to over 12, which was very good to see. And some of that came from he apparently can hit even higher into the 90s now with his fastball, which is good. Some say he's even been clocked at 99, which is awesome, but if he can get another out pitch, he's 6'3", 225. So if he can work on his slider and get that two pitch mix that's probably needed for him to be a relief pitcher, that would be awesome.
I got a question for you. As a guy who's going to be 22 now and hasn't pitched above rookie league, should we be concerned as Twins fans, or as a reliever, once he figures it out, should he be able to move pretty quick?
I mean, I think what I was just telling you, he missed so much time in his collegiate career. I think it's just more of getting the feel for that slider and then getting some of that velocity back with his fastball. And I think we saw the velocity come back in his fastball last year, which in some of these lower levels of the minors, he's just going to be able to overpower guys. So really for him, for the next couple of years, it's going to be all about developing that secondary pitch and to continue to work with that pitch and keep using it in games. So for me, it's not even important about him, you know, lowering his ERA per se as it is. I know he's going to be able to go out there against guys that are younger than him at the plate and just throw straight gas and strike them out. But that's not going to work at the major league level. So he's going to need to continue to work on that secondary, that slider.
You know,
this guy's a non-drafted free agent. So if he moves at all, it's a bonus, right? I mean, if he just becomes a triple-A guy that fills a roster spot, that exceeds expectations. This guy's a lottery ticket. Anything he does is money in the bank.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think he was highly rated coming out of high school, I thought. He didn't get drafted, so maybe not that highly rated, but definitely one of the better prospects coming out of the Northwest for whatever that's worth.
I'm looking at his line here from last year, is kind of his game by game. Is it kind of normal for guys to go, like, I mean, he never pitched back-to-back days, that's for sure, and he never pitched, like, 2 days later. It's always like 3, 4, 5, 6 days in between appearances. Is that pretty normal for guys at his level or what?
Well, you're talking about a team I think the Elizabethton had like 20 pitchers or more on the roster last year. So there's a lot of guys that are getting down there. You have to get a lot of guys work. And I think he threw, what, like 5 innings the year before? So I think there was probably considerable idea of try to take it slow. Don't put too many innings on him all at once.
Mm-hmm.
He also, I mean, his ERA looks good, but he did give up a lot of runs while he was on the mound. So I think some of his, even though it looks like he didn't work that many innings, he only allowed 7 earned runs for the season, but he gave up 22 runs overall. So when you have younger guys behind you, there's more errors being committed and stuff like that. So some of it might have just been that he, even in those outings that he had, that he just had to use a lot of pitches, and so they gave him extra time off.
Yeah, well, and if there's anyone that we really should be excited about from the Eton Twins last year, pitching-wise, Brandon Paulson's a guy, right? He's our art school guy that throws 150 miles an hour.
I believe when Dave St. Peter was here at the Twins Caravan in Fargo, he said, yeah, he throws 100 miles an hour, but he can't hit the broadside of a barn. So, we'll see.
Yeah, that's about right. 7 innings pitched, 13 walks.
Yep, it's coming. It's like the character in Bull Durham. He just can't hit the zone. Oh, you hit the bull.
Also, I remember, I think down in that East City team, you had Jake Reed pitch there, Felix Jorge pitch for them. Steven Gonsalves,
right?
So yep. They do have a lot of guys, but I think what's more important to remember is most of these guys are a long, long way from Minnesota.
Yeah, and Derek Rodriguez, he wasn't always a pitcher, right? He's the son of Ivan Rodriguez.
Yep.
And so
he started as like an outfielder.
Yeah, so that's a name you maybe should know anyways, if it's not a guy. Anyways, Cameron Boozer, he's a guy, but not a guy. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, he throws high 90s. I'll take that for right now.
Big velo.
Yep, that's what we're into.
Hashtag
Dr. Contact.
Big velo. We're all over it. All right, let's do that thing where we talk about beer.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my.
So I'm just going to start it off this year. Since I'm 30 years old, I'm a big fan of drinking things that are having 30-year anniversaries. So this evening I'm drinking the Upheaval IPA out of Portland, Oregon, the Widmer Brothers Brewing Company. The Upheaval IPA, it's pretty good for an IPA. It's hoppy, it's bitter, you know, has all that kind of stuff going for it. My favorite thing about it, pour it into a pint glass and just take a big old whiff of it. You could just smell those grains. It almost has a bready smell to it.
Oh, here we go with the bread.
And it doesn't taste like a bready beer, but it smells so bready and delicious. And it has a nice, real thick, creamy head on it. So I really enjoy it.
Let me tell you about the beer that I'm drinking. I think we got a brewery out here in Seattle called Elysian Brewing Company. They've been around for over 20 years, a great craft brewery. And on
they've
their,
they're for 30 years.
No, they're, well, let me get to the rest of the story here. They make a great red beer called the Men's Room. It's a red ale. It's fantastic. Their packaging says corporate beer still sucks. And after 20 years of fighting the man, it was recently announced that Anheuser-Busch is going to be buying their brewery. And now, instead of saying that corporate beer still sucks, they're becoming part of corporate beer. So I went out and got some Elysian beer so I can drink it before Budweiser gets their hands on those recipes.
Budweiser isn't even a thing. It's Ambev, right?
Yeah, InBev.
InBev, which is from the land of Max Kepler.
Yeah, from Germany, and I think they control something like 45, almost 50% of beer sales in the United States. It's disgusting. Almost all of the beers that you probably know, the major brands, are owned by InBev. It's ridiculous. Anyway, that's what I was drinking, so someone else talk.
I am having a from Summit, their Horizon Red IPA. So they call it kind of a mix of between an IPA and an amber style beer. So I like, I mean, if you're not in the mood for something that's like as hoppy as some IPAs, or I mean those double IPAs that are out there, this is kind of a good in between. So you still get some of the hoppy flavor. It's a little bit, you know, kind of medium, not too dark, not too light, and a little bit of malt taste as well. So overall, not too bad to kind of mix it up and get a little bit of a toned down IPA flavor. Jay?
Well, yeah, you guys are going to be kind of mad at me because I didn't have time to stop for some beer on the way home from work today, and my wife was running around with the kiddos, so I am drinking a vodka do. You guys know what a vodka do is?
A vodka do?
It's vodka and Mountain Dew, and this happens to be non-carb diet Mountain Dew. It's okay, you know? It's fine. What's so funny?
Very well. It's okay.
You're really convincing us.
Anyway, vodka do. Hey, it's what, like, you know, the cool kids are drinking these days, apparently. That's vodka do.
Okay.
Well,
I say vodka don't.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to talk to your wife, Jay. Her not buying you beer, treating you like a king.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go around the league and let's get this thing over with. Ichiro from the Land of the Rising Sun signs with the Marlins. He's going to make $2 million, otherwise known as $8 million less than Dory Hunter. Who do you rather have on the Twins?
Well, I'll tell you this. It wasn't even close. The most popular Twin at Twins Fest this year. I mean, it wasn't even close. Forget Buxton. Forget Mauer. Forget Dozier. Forget Hughes. It was far and away Dory Hunter. And I was actually a little, I mean, I was expecting him to get good crowds and be mobbed everywhere, but it was borderline pandemonium when Dory Hunter was traveling the hallways, or his lines were around the stadium, quite literally. So I think a lot of the fans would probably say Dory Hunter, but to save $8 million and take Ichiro, that sounds like a pretty good trade.
I would rather have Dory Hunter here, but if the Twins could have signed Norichi Aoki, who just got picked up for half of what Dory Hunter's making, I would have loved that move.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be weird to see Ichiro. I mean, it was weird seeing Ichiro in a Yankees jersey. So now to see him in a Marlins jersey. Well, most players look weird in a Marlins jersey. But anyway, I mean, this gives him an opportunity. He'd need to have one heck of a season to get he's closing in on 3,000 hits, so he's in his major league career, not even counting what he did over in Japan before coming over here. So he's at 2,844. So in order to pass that, he'd need to have more hits than he's had in the last 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons in a row. So in 2012, he had 178 hits.
Well, so. I think he'll get it. I think he'll get it over this season and probably part of next season too. Let me ask you: is Ichiro a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Eric,
no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yep. First ballot.
He's not first ballot, but he's a Hall what? Of Famer.
No, he will be. For what he did, they'll consider what he did in Japan.
Exactly.
I think he's really the first international player that has come to Hall of Fame or will come to Hall of Fame eligibility that had a significant chunk of his career missing. I mean, mm-hmm. we've had a couple on the along the way that have proven to be good or even very good, but certainly no Hall of Fame. You know, Ichiro spent the majority of his 20s playing in Japan, and he played a lot of baseball. You know how they play over there; they play year round, and they play in those gigantic stadiums and. So for me, Ichiro's a Hall of Famer. I'll give it to him. The guy's got a lot of rings. He seemed to always be on a winning team. You know, he was never
He started his career with 10 straight All-Star games, And in his first year in the league, he was the MVP somehow.
He's got a couple batting titles.
And the Rookie of the Year. So, he has some things.
He had almost 1,100 hits in Japan before coming over here. Oh, that's crazy. Crazy. Yep. And Gold Glove defense.
Oh, yeah. I think he had a 10-time Gold Glover. He finished in the top 10 in MVP voting, I think, three times, including when he won it his rookie season. Just masterful guy of hitting the baseball. His control skills were exceptional.
Yeah, he was a good bunter. He was a good base runner. Just really his all-around game. He was a leadoff guy. He played every single day, took a lot of walks. He really, intimidated pitchers. Pitchers hated facing. And, for a Miami Marlin team that really doesn't have a whole lot going for it other than Fernandez and Stanton, why not?
Okay.
So we decided we'd rather have Ichiro than Hunter, except for the fans at Twins Fest.
It's more than that, Eric. It's throughout the sustain that or multiply that out throughout the whole season. I don't think Twins fans would be anywhere near that excited about Torii Hunter. So if he draws 50,000 extra fans over the course of the year, sells a bunch of jerseys, and maybe takes a win or two on the board, that's good.
Hey, your boy E. Rolf was saying PR move. I
said, Eric, this was clearly a PR. If you want to talk about PR moves, this was clearly a PR move. When they were talking with Torii, he made it clear, and I believe him. He was genuine. He was honest. He was funny. He was engaging. He said, I never wanted to leave Minnesota. I wanted to finish my career here. This was a business decision. The Angels were offering a lot of money. I had to do it. I knew the writing was kind of on the wall, but he made it clear that he loved Minnesota. He loved playing here. He loved the organization. He loved the manager, his teammates, the city, everything. So Torii Hunter's kind of coming home. And if you remember when he left, he always said he would finish his career in Minnesota. He's kind of making good on that promise.
Well, let me talk about the only other interesting thing that I really care about in baseball right now, and that's the Milwaukee Brewers bringing back the Beer Barrel Man. And for those of you who don't know, the Beer Barrel Man was a logo of the Brewers from during the 70s.
Wasn't his name Bernie?
His original name was August with an O. August with an O, and he was used by the Milwaukee Brewers minor league ball club in the 1940s. When the Braves moved to Atlanta in 65 under Bud Selig.
The Vec thing, right?
I don't know what you're... Bill Veeck? Is he involved with the Barrel Man?
I thought the Barrel Man was a Bill Veeck thing. I could be wrong.
I don't see anything about that here. Anyway, the Barrel Man is back, and he's heinous looking, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, Bill Veeck created Barrel Man when he was running the Brewers minor league.
If you say so. Per the internet.
In the mid-40s. I have a
mug with him on it from the only time I've been to Miller Park.
Now, they discontinued him. Why exactly did they discontinue him?
Because they got their other...
Yeah, they got Bernie the Brewer.
Okay.
To slide down the slide. And
right.
This Barrel Man is creepy in, life-size form. On a cup or like on a patch on a jersey, he's fine. But if he walked up to any kid at Miller Park next year, they will cry. It's like that crazy pelican that New Orleans had on as their mascot for 3 weeks, and all he was doing was scaring kids. So they had him go through a facelift. So.
What do you guys think about the Yankees trying to not pay A-Rod his milestone bonuses?
Do you guys what I was going to say on this topic is, do you guys think A-Rod will open the year with the New York Yankees, or do you think he's being shopped and will be someplace else on opening day?
He won't be able to be shopped.
If the Yankees eat the whole salary, they might as well roll him out there a little bit to see what he can do after a year off.
Yeah.
As I've stated before, I'm an A-Rod lover. I think he's on the Yankees to open the year, but the interesting thing about the Yankees trying to get out of these milestone bonuses are these milestone bonuses aren't actually a part of his MLB baseball contract. They're like related to some other side deal, marketing deal that the Yankees have with A-Rod. And so they say they're not huge numbers that A-Rod's going to get for these milestone bonuses. I think it's huge.
Like 6,000.
600,000 for, you know, tying Willie Mays or whoever on the home run records.
Yeah, passing Willie Mays this year, which he could do. I think he's like 11 behind.
So, I mean, it's not a huge amount of money, but it definitely...
I thought it was $6 million.
The Yankees trying to make get away from this. Is it $6 million?
$6 million, I believe, for each guy he passes, which is why the Yankees are trying to get out of it. I don't know that if they'll be able to. And if they are, of course, it'll go into appeal, and we won't ever find out if he actually is going to get paid until sometime next offseason.
Oh, yeah. So they're trying to block it, but again, it's not part of his actual Major League Baseball contract. It's something else.
I think we've talked too much A-Rod the last few weeks on the show.
No such thing. More A-Rod. We're going to talk to A-Rod, and we'll actually do that. We'll just
all right. Well, hey, A-Rod. Listen. As long as we're on this thread, real quick, is A-Rod a Hall of Famer?
No.
He was.
That's a good way to put it. He was.
I mean, he is on the field, but he's not in 2015 with the steroid stuff. You know, there's just no way.
And this wasn't his first steroid admission. So this.
Oh yeah, he's.
I mean, I think if he could have, because when he came out with it, when he talked about it, got it from his cousin or whatever a few years ago. I think if that ended up being the end of it, and he was clean for the rest of his career. It could have been close after once guys like Bonds and some other guys get in before him, but I think with this, there's just no way. I mean, people already didn't like him, and then this happened.
Yeah. The only reason I ask is because, you know, rewind, you know, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, could you ever imagine a conversation about A-Rod's Hoff eligibility being such a going such a drastically different trajectory? I mean, when this guy was coming up with the Mariners and even down with Texas, I mean, there was just no doubt about it. The guy was like, what, the youngest to make 500 home runs, or one of the youngest to make hit 500 home runs?
14-time All-Star, 3-time MVP. You know, how many silver sluggers does the guy have? How many times has he been in the top 10 in MVP voting in addition to those 3 first-place finishes? I mean, this is a guy that has done amazing things, and for a long time he was doing those amazing things as a shortstop. So, I mean, just a generational talent on the field and a generational asshole and narcissist off of it.
It's true. You know, it's really true. When you start bringing a life coach into the dugout, then you're really hurting your Hoff chances.
Yeah. Yep.
So, that leaves
Kevin
us where?
Kevin Correa might sign with the Astros, and I mean, we loved what he did here, so that's about all we need to say about him.
You know, it's I think like Kevin Correa, I think much like Drew Butera, you hate them. You cannot stand them when they're wearing that Twins uniform, and as soon as they're gone, it's like all that animosity you feel towards them just kind of – it just disappears because – they're so bad. It's like they're likable. Like you just want them to. You want things to work out for them, kind of. They're terrible. You're like, I hope it works out for them somewhere else.
I mean,
who do you think has a better 2015, Kevin Correa or Jason Marquez?
Where's he signing? Did I say Chicago?
I don't know. He didn't play in the majors last year. So
somebody was talking to him. I didn't, you know, they made the comment that he hadn't pitched since 2013 or 2012 or something like that. But there was a team that was going to invite him to spring training or something. I don't remember where I saw that, but
he's the Reds, maybe.
Yeah, he signed a deal with the Reds,
a minor league deal, right?
Yep.
Right. Well, I'll go with Correa, I suppose, if you're going to make me pick.
Yeah, Correa. We love him now.
For a helmet nacho.
Oh, jeez.
No. You're, I'm not giving you, you're already on the hook for one, potentially, so I'm going to just stick where I am.
Fine. We're both going to be bad, though. I'm going to put that out there.
Yes.
Come at me, bro.
Okay.
All right, what else we got?
Out of here, huh?
Yeah, let's end this.
This madness. Thank you, everybody, for listening to another week of the Talk to Contact podcast. For E. Rolf Pleiss, his twin brother, equally as ugly, the baseball pirate, Cody Christie over there in Fargo, and me, Jay Korn, over here in Minnetonka. We'll be back again next week with another 90 minutes of fresh, hot, hot stove baseball news. We'll have some surprises, maybe a guest. We'll have all kinds of madness going on. So thanks again. See you next week.